Everybody else ready? Okay. So we'll call today's special meeting of Laws and Rules to order. This is a special meeting to discuss proposed local law number 23, which is the Ulster County Ethics Law, changes to that law. Clerk Mahler, do you mind taking attendance?
Sure thing. Chairwoman Bartels.
Here.
Deputy Chair Roberts. Legislator Gavaris.
Present.
Legislator Heppner.
Here.
And Legislator Ronk.
Present.
You have 4 members present, 1 absent.
Great. Thank you. Okay. So, I'm gonna open up the floor. The way we've typically gone through this is, you know, from front to back, but I just wanna first open up the floor to members, see if there's an alternative suggestion or anything that anyone wants to highlight at the start.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead, Legislator Gavaris.
Yeah, so because it's gonna come up in several locations, and we did talk about this before, but the definition of a relative in all its various forms. I was trying to figure out another name for people who act in the same capacity while not being a biologically or legally related individual. And the most common term I could find out there is de facto relative. So, okay. So I'm not quite sure, you know, the best way to incorporate it. But the loose definition that I sort of came up with is a de facto relative is an individual who may be related to another person legally or biologically, may not be related to a person legally or biologically, but has provided for the person's basic needs or regularly cares for that person. Alternatively, a de facto relative may be an individual who is simply developed a relative-like bond with the person and interacts with them on a daily basis. The relationship between the two is indistinguishable except for the fact that they are not legally or biologically related. So I don't know if council has a better way of...
I took the shorthand down of what you're saying. I mean, it makes sense to me. I'm happy to... Do you have a written version of that?
Yeah, I can just paste it into the chat. I just quickly started doing this before this meeting, so... It's very rough.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you.
Okay. And the one thing that I would say with regard to that, if I could just jump in. So where we have definitions of, we have definition of a child, and then we have definition, it did say relative or immediately family member, immediate family member, member of household. Now it just says immediate family member of household. I think it'll be interesting to see where a de facto relative comes up in relation to prohibition, because based on, you know, my read of a lot of this, the places where the immediate family member, whether the relative, whether de facto or biological, comes into play has mostly to do where there's a financial implication, you know, a financial reliance on that person. So I think we'd want to just be wary of clarifying and classifying someone like Aunt Sue, who's not really Aunt Sue and isn't financially beholden to the household in any way, where we'd want to, you know, draw that in to this law. But we'll see as we go through. So if you could provide the written definition that you just read, that would be great.
Yeah, put it into the chat.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Okay, and also just before we begin, everyone should have noticed that Jay put several documents in our agenda packet, including the 2019 memo from the county attorneys, which was a memo that we were working off of in a detailed back and forth with the county attorney's office on a point by point. So now we've come a ways from that. I would expect that whatever we're going to propose, we're going to hear back from the county attorney's office at some point. But many of those questions and concerns I know have been addressed in meetings over the course of this long passage of time that we've been working on this. Okay, so let's just start at the top and refresh ourselves. So we've got the title and purpose. If anyone, as we go through, if anyone has anything specific in any of the sections, and even if we're just highlighting it for further investigation or further detailed work. Section one is title, purpose, and statutory authority. A is the title. There's a minor change there. B is the purpose. And then three, we move into definitions. Section two is definitions. C is the ethics law. That's remained the same from the previous. So section two is definitions. Let's move through the definitions. And if anyone has any questions, I'm going to highlight changes as we go. Appear or appear before board of ethics or ethics board. There's a minor change. It's a ministerial change. Chief fiscal officer remains the same. For child, we made a gender change to make it gender neutral, just child or stepchild. Contract, same. Contractual goods or services is a technical change. County remains the same. County officer or employee, same. I is customer or client. And then gift. Now gift, the definition of gift was also an issue that was brought up by the county attorney's office in the county attorney's memo. So I don't know if we want to take some time or if anyone has any concerns or issues or wants to speak to that at this point.
I don't know if you want to bring it up. I mean, you know, if I remember the county attorney's memo, I didn't find it held a lot of water, in my opinion. I'm not sure that my attorney did either.
If I recall, and then we can hand it over to the attorneys to weigh in. If I recall the county attorney's memo, and I'm going to summarize, I hope not erroneously, it had to do with a technical issue that spoke to bribes. The idea that we were only speaking to an exchange that had no financial expectation on the other end meant that we were not specifically including bribes. I think I may be oversimplifying, but that's what I recall being in there. We can pull it up if you want, but do the attorneys want to weigh in on that?
Sure. I mean, I could speak to it briefly. Obviously, under B in their memo, it addresses, it does identify bribes as, an issue with the definition as drafted originally. But at the bottom, it says, however, given that the term gift is defined to only include situations where nothing is expected in return, bribes are necessarily excluded from the gift prohibition. I think we've had some discussion on this, and obviously we're going back a little bit. I don't necessarily agree with that analysis. I don't know how minority counsel feels about that. I still feel like bribes are prohibited. Obviously, we can certainly expressly put it in the definition if that would clarify it for the county attorney's office and satisfy their concern. That's easy enough to do.
Yeah, I think if I can interject briefly, Chris, this analysis is a reach, and that's being kind. Bribes are prohibited by the penal law. And frankly, this language, if I'm not mistaken, was taken from largely from Orange County's existing ethics law. I really don't have a concern that Orange County is permitting bribes by the way that their language is written. So I don't think this is a substantive criticism that really needs to be addressed. If I can be blunt.
I agree.
I'm not going to bring up some of the recent news, but yeah, I mean, I think that I think that the fact that bribes are included in the penal code is something that confused me about that analysis, that we would have to write a law that expressly disallows bribes seems odd, but it's something we can just flag to just be triple sure. And it's also something I'm sure we'll hear about again when we submit this. And, you know, I'm expecting we'll get another memo from the county attorney's office that when we submit something that's in a more finalized form.
Well, the author of this memo no longer is an employee of the county, so.
Correct.
You know, I mean, we can flag it all you want. I personally, you know, I'm comfortable with it as it's written.
Okay.
Again, to counsel's point, I mean, there's nothing in this that allows, there's nothing in this language that allows bribes, and bribes are also, it's criminal.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that was the conversation. It's coming back to me now that I say the word criminal, because that was, I feel like our stance on this when the county attorney's office came in with this memo is that you don't create an ethics law to re-outlaw things that are already criminal in nature. You know, ethics goes beyond criminal violations.
Right. Okay. Does anyone else want to speak on this? Okay. So let's move on. Kay is, what John brought up before, immediate family member of household definition. Okay, so we have John's comment from earlier as relates to de facto relatives. One thing that I noticed in this, which may be technical, if we look at, actually it's in the next thing. So I'm good with this. Does anyone else have any concerns about this?
I mean, I have concern about the broadness of what John came forward with. I just think that you're going to bring in too many people that aren't necessarily intended to count as a relative.
Yeah, if I can just jump back. So in terms of understanding it as a definition, a de facto relative, I mean, that's where I'm interested, where it intersects with the law itself. If we're going to make all de facto relatives, I would tend to agree with you that it becomes too broad, because for me this is all about people who have a financial connection, which is why we're talking about dependent children, not emancipated children, or people that are living in a household. And that's something I recall that we debated about whether or not it should be extended to anyone living in the household, even if they were emancipated. But I think we came to the agreement that if someone was living in the household, they had some financial interest. So that's why we left it, which is pretty yeah, broad, to allow for, you know, unrelated, potentially even beyond domestic partners
yeah,
in the household. So I'm not ready to include the de facto de facto definition as a definition of immediate family member, but we can have that conversation down the road. Yes, Legislator Growers.
Yeah, so the only place it really, the extended part to what I'm saying falls into is under related prohibitions in what is now Section L. That's where it talks about siblings. Other than that, it's really just the child portion of it that's mostly relevant.
Mm-hmm. Or a person claimed as a dependent on the, you know, tax returns.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm not looking to make it broad. I'm looking to make it narrow. But if we are considering a definition of brother, you know, aunt, uncle, whatever it is that's in here already as a legally or a biologically related individual, to me it should extend just as much as a person who is not, but meets all the other definition of that same title.
Except I think the only titles, where are you looking at interest? You're saying interest L?
Related prohibitions.
What section is that?
Which version is that?
The one from the newest one, the proposed local law 23.
So what page are you on? What page is it?
Now you're asking a lot of questions. It's well, it's just above section six, the new section, page 26. I'm sorry.
Page 26. Okay. Let's jump over for a sec, just so I can see what you're referencing. Related prohibitions. No officer or employee shall take action or participate in any manner whatsoever in an official capacity in the discussion, negotiation, or awarding of any contract or in any business or professional dealings with the County of Ulster or any agency thereof in which the official or employee, their spouse, unemancipated child, sibling, parent or step-parent, or a member of the household has or will have an interest. Well, okay, so what's interesting about this and what you've pointed out is, and this was something that we had a back and forth, because the parent or step-parent was something, that's the difference. You know, we have a definition of a relative, and it doesn't include parent or step-parent unless they live in the household, you know, which would make them a member of the household. And we added parent or step-parent to this. And I recall that we did have a debate about it. I think I was on the side of not putting parent or step-parent in here, but I think I lost, you know, I think I lost the argument. I'm open to having the discussion, because we definitely step outside of our own definition in this related prohibition. So I don't know if we want to take it on here or if we want to take it on.
I think we wait until later on that, but now we have the definition from John, if we, you know, or a definition from John that we can add in. I just think it's cleaner if we go through the law piece by piece. Okay. Otherwise, this is going to get.
Yeah, so let's keep going. So now we're up to interest. I had a small, let's see, does anyone have any comments here? Because I did have one.
No.
Okay, so in the definition of interest, the third sentence, I think it is, interest does not include any benefits or entitlements that are procured for the benefit of county employees or officers. I don't know if we need to say all county employees or a class of county employees. Like, I don't know if we need to define that a little further. We give an example, but maybe I could ask council about that.
The way I read it, the benefit of county employees covers all county employees. It doesn't limit the number of county employees or any division of the county employee pool, so to speak. We could interject all, obviously that's an easy thing to put in, but I don't know if it's necessary.
Well, maybe we would need to say negotiated or contractual benefits or entitlements. I mean, I think that's because arguably couldn't you have a benefit or an entitlement that went to one or two county employees or one or two county officers? I mean, that's what I'm looking at it from the opposite side, to say that an interest, this sentence might preclude an interest that only applied to one or two people and wasn't negotiated or is contractually obligated.
I don't think so.
Why?
Because they'd still both be employees.
Yeah, I know they would. But what I'm saying is that
about labor contracts. This is talking about, like, contracts.
I get that. Well, let me see. Legislator Gavaris, do you have a hand up?
I was going to say, I think what you're referring to is, and maybe I'm misunderstanding you, but you're referring to this as a group for employee, the term as all employees. You're questioning whether or not it would apply to a single or a small group. But I think it does, because it's saying benefit accruing to a county officer or employee. It doesn't say employees. So it's not, in my opinion, it's direct to each individual employee, not as the collective employees.
Well, it does say employees. It says interest does not include any benefits or entitlements that are procured for the benefit of county employees or officers. But I'm saying if you're being the devil's advocate in this argument, then couldn't this be precluding an interest that is just for one person or one or two people? and then thereby.
How about, sorry to interrupt, if I may make a suggestion. Interest does not include any benefits or entitlements that are procured for the benefit of any county employee or officer. Does that solve it?
I don't know. All right.
I think you'd have to have employee or employees, officer or officers. I think you would have to put it somewhere in the mix like that. But I think that this is one of the places that we run around in circles on something that
yeah, isn't. Let's just flag it and council will look at it and I'll
sure.
My notes down. Yes, Legislator Guevaras, go ahead.
I understand the way you just said it this last time. Now I understand what you're trying to say here. You're questioning if so through less than above board actions, there was a benefit that would be, and I want to use the right words here, if they were to procure a benefit for, let's say, Deputy Executive Ryder and Deputy Executive Milgram, okay, they're the only two, they procured it. It wasn't legitimate. It shouldn't have occurred, but it was procured under this definition, I think is what you're saying, that would be allowed.
Yeah.
So that's your concern, is that they could, it's procured.
Yeah.
So it's,
my concern legal. Is that we create a loophole with that sentence, but
I get it.
But we can talk about it a little more. Like I'll just, if Jay, can you just flag that? Thank you. Okay, then we go down to their spouse and emancipated children. This is where expanded on the relationship definition, firm partnership, corporation. A corporation, any stock of which is owned and controlled directly or indirectly by such officer or employee, where such officer or employee owns 10% or more membership units. 10% or more of outstanding stock or membership units, but shall not include any publicly traded corporation. And I had a note here, which may be crazy. I feel like I'm going to drive Legislator Ron crazy with this question, but I'm just going to throw it out there. So I wrote, why not, as it relates to the publicly traded corporation? Because again, what if you had someone that had controlling membership of a controlling ownership of a publicly traded corporation? Are we still fine with them?
But we're not talking, this section doesn't talk about controlling ownership. This talks about 10% ownership.
Okay. All right. We're good with that. Okay. It's minor. It's one of those things where we could go round and round. Okay. M, investment.
You're saying like if Peter Buffett became a county legislator.
I do. That is what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay. Investment hasn't changed. And then we move to N, local elected official. Comptroller was added. Previous, we did not have the comptroller previous or wasn't in there. O, ministerial act. P, outside employer or business. Remains the same. Q, political party. It's a ministerial change. R, person, both individuals and entities. All right. Jay, will you just flag that for me? I just want to be reminded about our entities as people. Sounds like another law I'm not so happy about. S, prospective employer, relative. Okay. All right, now I can be back on paper. T, sibling, brother, sister, half-brother, half-sister, step-brother, step-sister.
Everybody tells.
Yes.
Going back to S for a section. Can somebody explain this to me? Because, I mean, I've read this over and over again, and quite honestly, I don't get it. The wording in this is very, very wonky.
Okay. I'm going to quick read it over. Does everyone have it in front of them, or do they want me to read it out loud?
I'm reading it as we talk.
Okay.
That first sentence is just, I don't know.
It's pretty funny. I'm going to read it out loud in case someone doesn't have it. Any person whom any officer or employee of Ulster County required to annually file an ethics disclosure form under this law, or the immediate family member of, has within the past 12 months sought employment from, to the extent that such officer or employee has actual knowledge of such immediate family member of such officer or employee actually seeking such employment or independent contract from such person or entity. There is actually, I don't even think there's a verb there. I think
it's grammatically incorrect.
Yeah, we've got some problems. The phrase past 12 months shall not refer to the 12 months preceding the adoption of the county ethics law, but the 12 months preceding the matter giving rise to the conduct that permits or disallows a contract or expenditure. Okay.
You want to know the hilarious part of that? I'm pretty sure this is our current law.
It is our current
law. It is.
It's like, it definitely needs to be reworded. Thank you for stopping us. See, this is what happens. We try to get through, and yeah, that's okay. So the intent of this, let's get down to this. A prospective employer is any person.
Think of person in relation to R of the definition that you just looked at. So it's not actually a person, it's an entity as well. Corporation, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, this is about the prospective employers, though.
So I don't think we need that definition of person to be individuals and entities, but I do think a prospective employer is any person or entity that the officer or employee of Ulster County who is required to file an ethics disclosure form or their immediate family member has sought employment from. So let's just fix that to be that basically that simple, and then we'll see how it flows with what follows. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah, Rentals, is it possible to do this the way we did last time where we actually had a working document that we're all can see and start making track changes as we're doing this?
We could do that. Jay, you want to put this up?
I think it's helpful.
I just point out that person is used 91 times in this document, so just be careful where you're...
In terms of changing definition, you're suggesting?
Dan count that?
I just did a control find. It includes personally and personal, but...
Yeah, I don't like the... I mean, I really do take exception to describing a person as an entity. Citizens, I don't even know what that means. I feel like we need a definition for entity then, which can be like C person. But I do think that a prospective employer needs to be a person or an entity, a corporation, or because it's not always a person that you're going to per se. Okay, so do we need to make these changes right this second, or do you want to keep moving and just flag it?
Well, I'm just, if we are trying to work through a new definition, then I would, as we're talking them out, I would say we should make them now. If we're just flagging it where you're going to later on do it, then no, obviously you just.
Okay. So we can do this right now. Jay, can you do something like, for prospective employer?
I'll step away for a few minutes, guys.
Okay. For prospective employer, have it be, any person or, I don't know, do we say entity or company? Let's say entity. That any officer or employee of Ulster County who is required to file an annual ethics disclosure form under this law. No, you can leave that.
Is there a comma then? Any person or entity, any officer?
Any person or entity that any officer or employee of Ulster County who is required to file an ethics. We could also do that in parentheses, if not instead of who is, but we could either way under this law. And then I would say in parentheses, I would do or the immediate family member. Has within the past 12 months sought employment from period. I don't get all the rest of this. I don't know if anyone has any comment, but to the extent that such officer or employee has actual knowledge of such immediate family member actually seeking employment, like that is not.
That should be like a new sentence, I think, but I'm not sure how to get there.
Why do we even need it?
Like, yeah, is it necessary?
like knowledge, that's a whole different, I don't even know why we need it.
Should be a sub, another paragraph maybe.
I just think it seems that it's opening the door for
someone to say they didn't know.
Yeah, to say that they didn't know. So I think the question in the definition is whether we want such an exception to remain, or if, because if we remove that, we're removing the possibility for an exception based on not realizing someone had applied for a job.
Yeah.
Which I think does warrant some deep consideration.
So can we just, can we flag that in color, that sentence, and in whether...
How would we prove that, by the way?
Yeah, I have no idea how we would prove it.
Like email, I mean, I'm just trying to think realistically. Actual knowledge is not easy to establish sometimes.
But do you want to make this so that if somebody were to approve a contract, had no knowing that they didn't know that they were going to go work for this prospective employer, and then they do, do you want to prohibit that? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I think the actual knowledge means you can't know that you're going to go work for this place and do a contract.
Sure, that makes sense.
I think it's confusing in that this is a definition of prospective employer. What does it have to do with, like, whether you have knowledge or not? It's a prospective employer. The definition of a prospective employer. The extent to which the actual knowledge would come in would be in the law and the prohibition. You know, it's not in the definition. Why is the definition? It's still my prospective employer. If my spouse applied for a job within the previous 12 months, it was my spouse's prospective employer, whether or not I knew about it. Like, I think that second sentence just doesn't speak to the definition. It's like the concern that Legislator Uchitel raises needs to be in the meat of the law where the prohibition would be. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. And this past 12 months, this last sentence is just, I think it's unnecessary, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think if I can jump in to further that, it's the question of the knowledge and whether or not the knowledge exists, or the information is known, should exist in relation to like the contract itself, not in relation to like whether you know that whether you know a family member was seeking employment or not. Like, that's where it should come in.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
All right. Let's definitely flag that sentence, that second, which you did. And let's look at it as it relates to conflict. The last sentence, I feel like we don't, I mean, I'm not sure that we need that there either.
I guess just being, you know, seeing the other side of it, is there any time limit? Because what if someone doesn't know?
Well, it says it's up sooner. A prospective employer is defined as someone who the officer or their immediate family member has within, why don't we change it to the previous 12 months sought employment from? There is a time frame there. And maybe change past to previous.
I guess we're defining what actual knowledge is in that definition in some way, right? Because we're defining it as knowing that you're going to work somewhere for a period of 12 months.
But no, this has nothing to do to me with knowing whether you're going to work there. It has to do with seeking employment. It's just about, this is defining what a prospective employer is. You might not get the job.
Well, because I guess it's retro, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Go ahead, sir.
I was just gonna say, because it's retrospective, I think the exception for a lack of knowledge is just meant to cover, like, if you approve a contract and I don't know, let's say I don't know that my child or family member, I don't know, you know, somebody that, you know, applied for a job at a place, but I do know the contract that I approved. And because I didn't have that knowledge, I, knowing the company and knowing the nature of the contract, I voted on it as a legislator without the knowledge that someone applied for a job 6 months ago is still in consideration, was declined for the job, or, you know, anything else, that person wouldn't be expected to abstain because they have no such knowledge of it. I think the thing that's interesting is, you know, the circumstances, like, you kind of are opening the door to, like, we've just went through these definitions of the relative, and, like, under what context does such definition, is such definition fulfilled when you wouldn't know that someone was applying for a job, I think is kind of interesting. But I do see there being perfectly, I don't want to say reasonable, but, like, you know, passable instances where you just didn't know that someone applied for it, and you wouldn't want to get in trouble for something that you legitimately didn't know in that context when it's in the retroactive past tense.
Sure. Yeah. No, I totally get that. I think ultimately it just needs to be, you know, rewritten, and I'm happy to work with Nick on that if he's interested.
Yeah. And we're going to have to just think about it. I mean, when you do a search for the word perspective and go through, you'll see it has everything to do with contracts entered into between the county and the prospective employer, actual employer of a relative or immediate family member. So it's a question of how this definition also intersects with the applicability within the body of the law itself. Okay. And I know, didn't we have a discussion at some point? I mean, maybe someone can remember this about not fully putting the onus, but requiring people who, businesses that enter contracts with the county to affirm whether or not they have any employees that are employee or are officers of the county. Feel like we had that discussion, or maybe it's something that I came across in my research, where as a condition and you know, Mark, I know as the former purchasing officer, you know, it's something we could put into our contractual obligations, that anyone's, you know, signing a contract with the county would affirm whether or not they have county officers as employees.
Yeah, I actually have a bid that went out today that's in front of me. I think one of the forms that we have actually has that information. But
can you forward it to Jay so that we can look at what we have as a standard? Certainly another level of protection.
And if not, it would certainly not, it wouldn't be a difficult add to the bidding document.
Well, maybe something we want to consider. All right. Is everyone all right with this? I can't see it. Now that we're screen sharing, I can't see everybody. So if I don't call on you and your hand's raised, just speak up. All right. So moving on. Sibling, brother, half-brother, half-sister, step-brother, step-sister. We've been endeavoring to also... to be gender neutral, we just might want to make a note. I don't know if we want to address that here, but just want to make a note to go back to for that. Subordinate. Okay, we added except those who serve in positions that are in exempt classification. Everyone's good. Unemancipated child. Means any child or stepchild of a county officer or employee, unmarried, and living in the household of the reporting individual, or who is claimed or could be claimed by law on the state income tax returns of the reporting individual as dependent. Now, I recall that we had a debate about whether or not you had a grown child living in the household of the reporting individual. And it was determined or just decided in the committee that we wanted to leave it because that person might have a financial interest in the household. it would beg the question of why the person has to be unmarried, because you could have a married, I feel like that's a little bit prejudicial if we're making the distinction. You could have a married 40-year-old child living in your household, maybe married but separated, maybe married living with their spouse, or unmarried. I'm just not sure why we have the unmarried distinction.
Yeah, I would take out unmarried, especially I think it's coming back to being even more common to have married individuals living at home with their partner.
Any other thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'll just reinforce that. It's not only is Jonathan right in that it's becoming a thing based on certain housing conditions and financial situations, but there's a culture, many cultures have multi-generational households that would fall under this. And I completely agree in removing the question of marriage at all.
Okay. Legislator Ronk, any thoughts? Are you okay with that? Okay.
I'm fine with taking out unmarried.
Okay. So unmarried. All right, let's move on. Prior ethics laws repealed, authority continued. This is mostly a technical section. I don't know if anyone, does anyone have anything to say about this section? Okay, we're going to move through. And now to section 4, Board of Ethics. Prior board is dissolved and reestablished under the terms provided herein. Okay, we begin with membership qualification of board members and removal. We have 7 members. Let's see. 7 members appointed by the county executive, one of whom shall be nominated by the chair of the Ulster County Legislature, one of whom shall be nominated by the majority leader, one of whom shall be nominated by the minority leader, 3 of whom shall be nominated by the county executive, and one of whom shall be nominated by the Board of Ethics. Of the 3 nominated by the chair, majority leader, and minority leader, no more than 2 shall be of the same enrolled party affiliation. Of the 3 nominated by the county executive, no more than 2 shall be of the same enrolled party affiliation. All appointments shall be confirmed by the legislature. In the event of the failure to gain approval, or in the instance of a creation of a vacancy, such succeeding member shall be determined by the entity which the original member was selected. Okay, so this section has evolved over time. Is everyone okay with where we're at currently?
I have a question, if I may.
You may.
In the event of a failure to gain approval, or the instance of the creation of a vacancy, such succeeding member shall be determined by the entity from which the original member was selected. So that just means that, like, if the majority leader's appointment becomes vacant, then the majority leader would appoint. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do you mind if I say something here, Tracy? I mean,
oh, I don't mind. I can't see you. Go ahead.
I still think that this section is the section that probably the county executive's office will object to most, because we still don't feel that it's in line with general municipal law. So
we disagree.
I know.
All right.
I just would hate to not be on the record showing that objection.
Okay.
Anybody who hasn't been deeply involved in this before want an explanation on that?
I can't see. Everybody else is kind of off camera, I think.
I suspect, as the person that probably has been involved in this the least, I would say I prefer to hear my explanation candidly from somebody, from one of my colleagues afterwards.
Fair enough.
Okay. One thing I just want to point out, and I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself here, but so we speak to the failure for someone to be nominated. So in the event of a failure to gain approval, then we just new appointments keep being made until we gain approval. That's the default on this, correct? Council?
Yeah, yes, that's my impression of what this language means. And if I may just speak on it just very briefly, I think this sentence was added, and for the benefit of any legislators who weren't around previously during this issue, this sentence was added after we had some instances where vacancies were created and then there was a question as to who was to nominate the replacement. And it was ambiguous actually at a time, but now I think this clears it up significantly.
Okay. Next section, residency and eligibility requirements. All members of the Board of Ethics shall reside in the County of Ulster and shall be eligible to register to vote in Ulster County. Enrollment in a political party shall be deemed effective in conformance with Article 5 of election law. So, again, just to raise an outside question, in the event that someone's not registered to vote, they're not deemed to be in any party. So they're just not enrolled at all, correct? Because this isn't saying they have to be eligible to vote, but they don't have to be registered to vote.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
Okay, and then we have prohibitions on serving as a federal, state, county, or local elected official or a county employee or concurrently holding the office of chair, first vice chair, second vice chair, secretary, treasurer, sergeant of arms at federal, state, or Ulster County political party. At least one member of the Board of Ethics shall be an employee of a town, village, or city within the County of Ulster. Nothing in this section shall preclude eligibility for service on the Ulster County Board of Ethics by duly elected fire commissioners and or members of school or library board solely by the virtue of their election to said office. Can someone refresh my memory of why we want at least one member to be an employee of a town, village, or city?
I don't know, but I will say I don't think we should.
If I could interject, if the county attorney's memo, I think subsection C refers to state law requiring that, and that's why we amended it to include it.
Wow. All right. Thank you.
Page 6 of the county attorney's memo.
Am I sharing the memo?
Sure.
Yeah, it looks like it's the memo. Yep. Seven member ethics. And then where is the section? Can you scroll down maybe, Jay, that memo? No, we just lost the memo. It's probably a little further down.
I think it's 6, right?
Yeah. Prohibits from being county, I would say it's no members. Such prohibits.
Right. So the fourth line from the bottom, at least one of whom shall be an elected or appointed official, county or municipality local.
Who currently on our ethics board is an elected or an appointed official from one of those places? Does someone know?
Not sure. Oh, is Clayton Van Cleek, is he still on the ethics board?
I don't think so.
He was at one point, I thought. He's elected.
Yeah. All right. So we have to do this, but this does not seem, I don't agree with this state law, but I get that we have to do this. So thank you for reminding us why we
can. Can I just ask who is responsible for that? Like that aspect of it? Like, I get that, like, you know, the minority leader is responsible for making sure the person's a party affiliated with the minority party. The county executive would be responsible to make sure that there's, you know, a diversity of parties. But like, is it like, what if like 5 of the 6 appointments go through and the last appointment is up for question and it happens to be minority leader, whatever, and there's no employee of a village or a town, does that mean that like the minority appointment has to fulfill that? Or whose responsibility is it?
Yes. I would submit that yes.
It's yes, a good
it,
point.
Yes, it does. It's a good question.
It introduces the material impact of the order in which the appointments happen.
So there's one appointment that'll always be the last appointment in this scenario because the board, the six members of the board appoint the seventh member, right?
Mm-hmm. So, if none of the six are employees, then they'd have to appoint an employee. No, it's a good point. And I mean, and maybe it's something to take up with the state. I doubt that, you know, we're going to get this minutia changed, but it seems I'd love to understand why this is required in the state law.
Well, and to just kind of push back on Mark's point, you know, nothing I have read here, and I might have missed it, but nothing I am hearing indicates that the ethics board cannot appoint their own member until all other members have been seated, unless I missed something. Mm-hmm. Like if a vacancy remains open, if someone doesn't get appointed, but the four others get appointed, the ethics board could still meet. They met this week with a skeleton crew, and that skeleton crew was, you know, could be enough to appoint that sixth member, but it would actually be the fourth member, which would then limit materially the options that the minority leader or majority leader, whatever is the remaining appointment, would have, which I think would materially hinder their ability to choose their appointment.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think that, Jay, you can just do some kind of flag that to note. Yeah, I'm looking at the current board members. The current board members, Mark, to your earlier question, Derek Spada, Gerald Benjamin, Marjorie Rover Reddo, Lou Klein, and Ken Hassett. Hassett. That's what it says on the website. But yes, I think you bring up a good point, Legislator Uchitel. I think that let's just flag this as something we need to follow up on. But all we can do is, since we're staggering terms, it does potentially put someone in a predicament, but we can't be in contravention with state law, can we?
No.
Okay. Thank you for answering, because it wasn't totally rhetorical. Okay.
That would be unethical.
Yeah, moving on.
Exactly.
Okay, term of office. Staggered 5-year terms. And at the expiration of the term of office, any member of the board, they continue to serve until reappointed. And then we have the staggering. The first member for 5 years, the second member for 4 years, the third for three. The chair's appointment for five, the majority leader's for four, and the minority leader's for three, and the member nominated by the Board of Ethics will serve five, and thereafter they'll be nominated for a term of 5 years.
Hey, Trace?
According to original manner.
Mm-hmm. I propose the idea of inverting the minority leader and majority leader's appointments, which would bring a little bit more balance, because the chair and the majority leader are 99% of the time going to be from the same party.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say chair 5 years, minority leader 4 years, majority leader 3 years would be my suggestion. It's not a hill to die on. It's just something that I was thinking about as I was sitting here.
Yeah. What does everybody else think about that? Can't see anybody else.
Generally, they all end up being 5-year appointments eventually.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Legislator Heppner, Legislator Guevaras.
Yeah, I'm just going back over the numbers.
My thinking would be I don't really have a direct answer, but I would, if in coming up with an answer, I would probably consider the not like limits on consecutive terms.
You mean having term limits?
Well, I mean, I don't know if there are term limits because I'm not familiar with the law. You know, I'm kind of coming into it now. So if there are term limits and some terms are shorter than others, then that would be a factor in how I would consider it.
Yeah, you know, we don't have term limits to my recall. I think, you know, if you're not reappointed, right, you stay in place until, but you could be reappointed.
I think it's one of those things we talked about for a very long time and just decided against.
Term limits. Yeah. I think we did spend a lot of time. I mean,
right.
I think if there were term limits, it would, if we ever considered term limits again, I think the term limits would have to start with the first full term. You know, that if there were a shortened, abbreviated term before, you know, if you had only 4 or 3 years, it wouldn't count the same toward your term limit. I don't particularly, I mean, I think it's a novel suggestion considering it's really just a difference of 1 year. And you could reappoint, but, I'm interested in hearing.
Yeah. On that basis, it's not a hill for me to die on because you could just turn around and reappoint them.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. It just increases the frequency with which you need to make the appointments. It doesn't actually change your hold over the seat as a, you know, in the role that you're serving.
Yeah. And just to be clear, legislator, you should tell, this is only for the first appointment, just so we start out staggered. When after the first appointment, in each of those cases, the chair, majority leader, and minority leader's next appointments will all be 5-year terms. So Everyone eventually gets a 5-year terms. It's just this first time. So I don't particularly have a problem with it. I'm okay with that change. I don't know where legislator Guevara's, I can't see you. Are you, thoughts?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Okay. All right, let's do that. Let's invert that. All right, moving on. Obviously the date we're gonna need to each term. Oh, so I have a note here. So each term shall commence on January 1st, 2020. Obviously we're gonna have to change that once we figure out where we're at. But I just made a note of whether or not we wanted terms to start on January. I have found that like January starts are a little challenging because it could mean that the previous body is appointing someone. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what everyone else's thoughts are. If we want to make it a few months, you know, March, April, you know, April, May start. What's it? Go ahead, Legislator Ronk.
So rather than have each term start January 1st, 2020, we could make this effective, you know, 30 days after passage or something like that. And then the terms will expire on December 31st of the year. And then will be reappointed, you know, subsequent to the manner by which they were originally appointed.
Right. We could definitely do that. I'm just saying in general, I mean, in practice, mm-hmm. I feel like it would make legislative life much easier if every term started in April or May rather than in January, considering it's fine when it coincides with a mid-year switch, when like the second year, but we always find ourselves in this place where we're several months behind on appointments.
Yeah, but these are these confirmed by the legislature or no?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, they're going to hold over anyway, so it's not like, I guess I don't understand where the problem is.
Well, I just think it would be cleaner. We don't have to do it, but I just think it would be, let's just pick a month. Let's say they were May appointments. Then there's no holdover. Then at the start of a year, you know, appointments are being made and everything's happening with the body in place versus appointments running out at the end of a legislative or potentially even an executive's term. I mean, you could have a situation where, you know, the executive is appointing two people you know, on their way out, and there's a whole, you know, it's being held over as we're getting a new executive, and then there needs to be new appointments versus everything happening within the year that a body's actually serving. I just, in general, it strikes me as easier. I think we have a need to have this arbitrary idea of things being wrapped at the end of a calendar year when the calendar year doesn't necessarily work best for the elected bodies, but I'm not stuck on it. I just think it's something we should consider. But I definitely think that this should take effect X amount of days after its passage, whatever that is.
Why don't we say February 1st? This way the appointments occur at the organizational meeting with every other appointment that we do. It's shorter than what you were looking for, but it's better than January 1st.
Well, we don't do many of these appointments because it usually involves, again, like, look at what's coming this year. We're going to have a whole new body. So, you know, it doesn't usually happen in January that these appointments in this year, we'll have many, many appointments that will not be made until, you know, March or April because of just getting the body in place, getting the committees to run the appointments through, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, it's not something I want to be stuck on. I just think procedurally we could help ourselves out by as we're shifting these things, to shifting them actually.
I mean, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. Most of our appointments end December 31st, so that's why I would be more inclined to just leave that way. Mm-hmm. Rather than have each term commence on January 1st, each term shall end on December 31st. Of the year, and then the new legislature or the new minority leader would appoint, and then the legislature would confirm. That doesn't necessarily have to happen in January, but I think that if you say May or April, I think that you might have them happen in June or July sometimes. I mean, it's right. Not a set in stone thing, and then you're going to have holdovers anyway. I don't know. It matters very little to me, so if that's something that is important to you, I'd be fine, you know, just letting it alone.
All right, let's just think about it. Let's leave it. We'll think about it. It's not going to be something that's going to stop it for me either, but I definitely think the termination rather than the start is smart as well.
Well, but that might pose a conflict with the previous paragraph where if the vacancy isn't filled, the person continues. So you're saying their term ends at the end of December, but if we don't appoint somebody to April, do they remain in effect anyway, even though their term is terminated?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're going into this January with many, 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 many vacancies where people are remaining in office because we didn't make appointments at the end of the year. That's happening. Yeah. That's going to be happening. And probably those appointments will be made in February and March, most of them.
Okay.
Most of them will not be made in January. At the org meeting. I mean, there would be obvious and, you know, an understandable pushback if all of a sudden there were, you know, 15 appointments in at the org meeting and committees hadn't even met yet to talk about it. Because it's not like the alternative would have been to have the existing standing committees as they sit right now, make the appointments for the next, you know, for the next term, which is allowable. It's just
these aren't done by committee. These are done by minority leader.
No, I know, but most appointments, even when they're not done by committee, go through committee. We have a process in place where they're discussed in committee. That's for, you know, many, many of our, whether it's, you know, something like soil and water, it's not done by committee, but when they're approved by the legislature, they're discussed in environment committee. As just one
disgust is generous, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. In some cases there's some deep discussion. Soil and water, not so much. Okay. So all right, let's move on. We got vacancies. That's straightforward. Removal of board members. We put in a method to actually remove the county executive upon his or her own initiative or upon a recommendation of the county executive by a vote of at least 2/3 of the members of the legislature. And that's being removed for cause.
That was to satisfy the executive's office on the legislature removing his appointments.
Mm-hmm. Are we all okay with this now?
Yes.
Okay. Going down, we have in the event that a removal proceeding is so commenced by the Ulster County Attorney, the Ulster County Attorney shall provide notice thereof to Legislative Council and Minority Council.
Okay. Yeah.
Compensation, no compensation, hiring of staff and consultants, though responsible for hiring their own staff and consultants, and the secretary shall not be a member of the Board of Ethics. The Board of Ethics may engage outside counsel as necessary and as provided for within designated budget appropriations. Legislative Council and Minority Council may not serve as such outside counsel. So we remove the county attorney providing legal and advisory services to the Board of Ethics. The removal, the striking of it, does it actually prohibit it? Because it does now, it no longer speaks to it. So can we get a confirmation on that from counsel?
Does it actually prohibit it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not as clear as it was, candidly.
Well, it used to allow it. We removed allowing it, but I'm saying, does our removal of allowing doesn't prohibit it?
Right.
So the members of the committee and the body, do we want to prohibit the county attorney from providing legal and advisory services?
I don't know, because there might be like some real short tertiary stuff that the county attorney could do that would save the taxpayers quite a bit of money in hiring outside counsel on, you know, minute items, but I don't know.
I will say clearly it doesn't look like it prohibits it, because it only prohibits legislative counsel and minority counsel. So by implication, the county attorney wouldn't be prohibited. And the prior version required, there was no other, the county attorney basically had to provide legal
and advisory services. Yep. All right. So,
what do you think?
I definitely want to think about this a little bit. I'm interested what
sounds
you
like
all
a flag.
Think. Yeah. I'm interested what you all think, but,
hey guys, I think the county attorney's memo actually spoke to that. I'm trying to go back to it right now, but I think there was a reference to that in there.
Jay's just going. Thank you. There we go. Okay, so it's ultimately, however, the removal of the reference to the county attorney will have no effect. Both the charter and the administrative code require the county attorney to advise all county officers, departments, agencies, and units in all county legal matters of civil nature. Removing the explicit reference to the county attorney does not remove this obligation. Indeed, most county boards and departments do not include in their authorizing legislation a statement that the county attorney will provide them legal services. As the proposed local law does not explicitly prohibit the county attorney from rendering legal advice, it's insufficient to change the county attorney's duties. But if it did prohibit, it would violate general municipal law. So the one point I would add is that the last sentence that we removed, which is the county attorney shall not provide such assistance if he or she deems the same may create a conflict. I don't know if we want to leave that in or if that's just an understood. Thoughts?
I personally don't think it's necessary, but obviously I defer to you if you think it's okay. Clear the other way.
Nobody else has, I can't see hands raised, so everybody's good. All right, so let's move on. Board of Ethics shall utilize special counsel in reviewing. Okay, counsel's firm. Neither such, okay, these are technical changes, should be fine. organization and meeting requirements. We're making some technical changes. Four members shall constitute a quorum. Rendering advisory opinions. No changes here. Who the opinions may be issued to, an advisory opinion which may run on the request of an existing officer or employee. I did make a note here about what about volunteer. So right now it says that an advisory opinion shall be rendered on the request of an existing or prospective county officer or employee or supervisory official of a county officer or employee and shall apply only to such person. Would there ever be a circumstance where any of our volunteer board members might need to seek an advisory opinion?
Perhaps.
So right now they can't because they're not an officer or employee, correct?
I think when they're operating on a board, they operate as a county officer, don't they? Members of the planning board?
Yeah, that's my interpretation. For example, I believe we've had instances in the past where even applicants have requested a review to a recommendation.
Yep.
To the board.
Any officer.
You're
or
right. It's right. I just saw it.
Paid or yep. Unpaid.
Yep. I got it. Okay, so that's good. All right, so we're no changes here, no changes to advisory opinions. Moving on to D, receive information and act on same, complaints to be signed. We're right now all the same number except for, should the board determine by a supermajority, we changed it to 2/3 vote, that there appears to be merit. She'll send a written invitation to the officer or employee in question to appear at a private meeting of the board and explain the apparent conflict or of interest or alleged violation. Okay. Board shall also inform the county officer or employee of the board's procedural rules. The county officer or employee shall have 30 days to respond, either orally or in writing. We defined what a reasonable time is. And the Board of Ethics shall have the authority to grant an additional 30 days at its sole discretion. Okay, if after consideration of the response, the board determines by 2/3 vote that there remains probable cause, then we stay the same. Again, supermajority is changed to 2/3. Okay, the board's findings, this is a change, and conclusions and order shall be provided to the county officer or employee. A copy shall also be provided to the county officer or employee supervisor or department head where applicable. If it's determined that the person who was the subject of the hearing violated this county ethics law, the board's findings and conclusions and order shall be made public at a minimum by inclusion in the annual report. If it's determined that the person who was the subject of the hearing did not violate the county ethics law, the board's findings and conclusions and order shall not be made public. Any comments, concerns here? The one note I had, and again, it's been a long time since I looked at this, so I was writing the notes fresh. At the end of this, I wrote, unless the person who was subject of the hearing would like it, the order to be made public, which I think we should have, I mean, in my thought, I was thinking we should afford that person the opportunity to have the board make it public if they want to, you know, in terms of if they were not in violation. Thoughts?
The hearing.
Ken, I lost you. I didn't hear you
I just said except, you know, or unless specifically requested by the person who was the subject of the hearing.
Yeah, that's fine language. I think we should afford that opportunity for that person. There's the
agreed.
Okay.
Can we jump back to making anybody who sits on any board a county officer? It's a little concerning, like. I think this is where maybe, you know, a prospective person who wanted to be on a board was seeking Board of Ethics advice. I mean, if you are a board member of the Recycling Oversight Committee, I'm not sure we want to have that person subject to public officer's law and all sorts of things that come along with being the county officer.
That definition is in the current ethics law.
And it's only in related, it's not, it doesn't subject them to public officer's law. It subjects them to this ethics law.
Yeah. And it's in the current ethics law. It's the definition of county
correct.
Officer or employee in the current ethics law.
Any board?
It says any officer or employee of the county, whether paid or unpaid, and includes without limitation all members of any office, board, body, advisory board, council, commission, agency, department, district, administration, division, bureau, or committee of the county.
Okay.
Not including a judge, a justice, or an officer or an employee of the court system. And it also says not including a member of an advisory board of the county if, but only if, the advisory board has no authority to implement its recommendations, to act on behalf of the county, or to restrict the authority of the county to act. So that quells some of your concerns, but not all.
Maybe why they didn't meet over the summer when individuals were trying to get opinions.
Yeah, that's interesting. But you know, that puts us in a problem. I mean, that's that exact circumstance. Well, like, who do we go to for that opinion in that case? Like, that's a, you know, an, I don't even know what it is, an ad hoc committee, an advisory committee, a working group. Like, how do we get a question of ethics answered then? So it's a good, I mean, you're pointing out the crux of the problem. If that was the reason they didn't meet, it would have been advisable for them to say that was the reason they didn't meet, but that's a different issue.
I know other people had requested advisory opinions anyway, but I do know some people may have fallen into that.
Okay. All right. But yeah, I think that's something I'm just going to make a note to myself, because we do need a way. I mean, this ethics law, I mean, we need a forum for those questions to be answered for sure. But it may not be this one. So we should find out. Maybe that would be just a question for the county attorney. Okay, so where are we? Meetings of the board and hearings by the board. Okay, this is all the same, just renumbering. We're moving on. Anyone stop if there's any questions about meetings or hearings? Rules and regulations, maintain records, master. Okay. Waiver request. Has anyone ever applied for a waiver request? Seems like a very odd thing. I don't know why that would be. Okay, and then referral by local boards. Okay, standards of conduct. General prohibitions. Shall not use an official county position or office or take or fail to take any action in the manner of, okay, well, this is a technical changes. Not substantive. And then we get to the first substantive change. Whenever a county officer or employee is required to recuse himself, promptly inform in writing, promptly file with the ethics board a signed statement, and immediately refrain from participating further. Now, we've not been doing this in practice. Is that why we removed this? What's the...
I don't remember. I think this is one of the things you wanted removed.
Well, I've only had to recuse once, and it was, you know, last month on advice of counsel, but I've never seen a member who recused themselves from acting on a matter, submit a statement in writing. Has that ever happened?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there have
been, I'm not aware of any instances. For
advisory opinions.
Yeah.
Speaking as a supervisor, If I have a staff member recuse, I want to know. I want to know they're recusing. And I, in fact, have rules like my claims auditor. I have a claims auditor who has, you know, their spouse works in one of the departments and they are not allowed to approve claims from that department. So it doesn't have to be in writing, but I, you know, for them to just skip over it without telling me would make me uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, that would be a, so in your example, are they giving, are they informing you in writing and have they submitted to the ethics board for every one of their recusals in writing?
No.
Right. No, but I like, that's what I mean. It's like, we're not doing this. So, so, all right. I mean, it says that they will recuse. So, all right, we can, let's make a note. I don't know the history of this. I don't know the history of this one. Maybe we can look back on it. But let's just make a note, Jay, that, that there needs to be some kind of notification, potentially some kind of notification to supervisor where applicable, and a public recusal where appropriate, something like that.
I mean, with all due respect, I'm not sure that we need to write into the ethics law that they have to notify their supervisor. I think each office can handle that themselves.
That's possible too. I'm just making a note that we can look back at this. And it may be fine just to have internal departmental, policies that deal with it.
We have it in our office. I don't know if every office does. I require a separate ethics certification. So
I think there's an employee code of conduct that requires something.
Yeah. All right, so let's just confirm that. Jay, can you also make a note to self to get the employee code of conduct, the county employee code of conduct that references recusal or conflict? Okay. Disclosure requirements. Let's see. Okay, if we could scroll down, representation stays the same. Appearances, these are technical changes, I think. Yeah, technical changes. And excluding hires made by civil service exams. I think 4 is the first real change. The disclosure requirements of this section shall be made in writing, directed to the chair of the Board of Ethics, and shall be made upon learning of such relationship or seeking of such relationship. All right. Disclosure requirements. Any comments on that? Hiring practices. Oh, these are disclosure requirements regarding hiring. Okay. That seems straightforward. Okay. Okay, so now we are at acceptance of gifts. There was a lot of chatter about this.
Don't do it.
Okay. Yeah. Does anyone want to speak about this? You know, recount the discussions we've had before? Thoughts? I think we're down to...
I think we're down to the people who have been here before.
We're down to you and me. I mean, I appreciate everyone else's attendance, but okay. All right. So I feel like we've gone over and over this. And I know that. Directly. Yeah. And I know that we also compromised a bit, internally, we came to a place where, we weren't 100% happy about things, but. And do you have a different recollection?
That's my recollection.
Okay. All right. So if anyone else wants to, if anyone else who's present, ask a question.
Oh, is it, you okay?
Yes.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Moving on. And then we're into this L. Here we are, bidding L. Wait a minute. HIJK. Bidding on accounting. So what's the, here we are, bidding by officers and employees. Can we just talk about this one that has been stricken? Can you go back, Jay? Bidding by officers or employees on county-owned real property acquired by tax sale. This is what's currently in, that you currently can't bid on. Is that correct? Yes, I see Mark nodding. You currently can't bid, and then you can't bid through an agent, representative, attorney, third party, spouse, child, membership. It should be presumed approved by acquired interest. Okay, not it. Owns land, joins. Okay, but you could if you own an adjoining parcel. Now, we struck that because, and this was, refresh my memory, this was over the debate of what actually the conflict was in getting a property going to the highest bidder if it happened to be someone. But we still have this prohibition on contractual agreements with the county for officers. So can the attorney speak to me about where we're at with this, so the striking of this? Are we still prohibited from bidding on properties? And also, is there a prohibition in general municipal law? Those are the two questions. I don't remember if the county attorney weighed in on this one.
I'd have to refer to his memo. Unfortunately, I'm on my phone right now, so I can't.
I think Jay's going
to
pull it up.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jay. My computer just died.
Hearing, and I see that he had lots of comments on hearing procedures. We can look at that in a minute, but not right now. Okay, we added the civil service law. Here, prohibition on using county property for personal convenience. What is that?
Okay. That's more like a wedding at the Egg Society.
I'm curious about where that is. But all right, I'll cross-reference and.
I can get back to you on that with just a bit of research.
So we're just looking through. All right, so I don't see it. So I think that if we can maybe, let's just, can council look closely at this striking? I remember the debate and the discussion, but I don't remember where we ended up, and I'm curious if we're still in the same place just without this chapter. I mean, I can say, and I have been on the record saying, it never made sense to me because, again, if a county employee, officer or employee bid on property in an open and fair forum and bid more than the next person, it would seem to me to the benefit of the county that we got more money for the property. But I recall there being some conflict with general municipal law. Do either Council Rigucci or Council Pascal recall an issue?
I seem to recall, and again, I'd have to look at the general municipal law on this point, but I do recall there being an appearance of a conflict, you know, potential inside dealing issues that I think were addressed in general municipal law. But again, I'd have to refresh my recollection on it.
Okay.
I don't want to speak without looking first too much into it.
Okay.
There's been some conversation among county treasurers about this, and they're citing the public officers law section 74 as a bar. I haven't given it a good once over, but.
Public officers law section 74, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, again, it's like, it's the logical part of me that's wondering what the conflict would be if someone was paying more than the next person at an open auction, but if we're prohibited, we're prohibited. For L, and I think even with the striking of this language, L still prohibits us because it prohibits the negotiating or awarding of any contract, and transfer of property is a contract in some manner, right? So, but L, I would flag in question, and you know, John, Legislator Guevara brought it up, the parent or step parent addition in the related prohibitions under L. Why we suddenly are including parents or step parents when we haven't before, unless they're members of the household. Again, if we go down a little bit further for prohibited interests, it says General Municipal Law Section 801. So Jay, if you could just mark parent or step parent. I don't know, Ken, if you're listening, if you have an issue with removing parent or step parent. But let's just highlight it. Thanks. All right, where are we at time-wise? 5:30, okay. Moving on. And then you'll see in prohibited interests there, it says General Municipal Law 801, that's... Okay. Is anyone else... Ken... I feel like I'm the only one here talking.
I'm here. I'm
kind of like.
And you have Heppner on the phone.
I do. Okay.
I apologize, madam. I'm just on my phone because my computer's out. So I apologize for not being on camera.
That's fine. Okay. Sorry, I know. I'm looking at the document and nobody's responding. So. I know this is tiring to everybody, but all right. So annual disclosure. I feel like we're out of the most controversial sections. So in the annual disclosure section, we have sergeant at arms, it's spelling, blah, blah, blah. And then section C of there, if you could stop for 1 second, it says any personnel shall become a candidate for office of any elected official of Ulster County. The disclosure form shall be filed by the candidate within 7 days after the filing of the nominating positions. So I'm curious, who facilitates that? Is it the Board of Ethics' responsibility to reach out to all prospective candidates? Because I don't feel like that's happening currently. And if we're, you know, if we're, this is a reasonable expectation to require that candidates file, but we might want to be specific about how this request and these forms are going out, whether it's from the Board of Ethics themselves or from the BOE, who knows who's filed. I don't know. Any thoughts from members or others?
I would say that the form would need to be created by somebody, and this doesn't designate who that is.
The form's already been created.
Personnel is who. Yeah, currently, the personnel department passes out the forms.
Yeah, the form is right now. This and this is in the current law. So this right now.
Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah, candidate for office, and I can tell you. I mean, I definitely.
I was mistaken as to what form it was. I got it. Never mind.
So I'm not aware that candidates for office are receiving these disclosure forms.
They are.
They are? Or
That's
are not?
That's my understanding.
You're saying they are?
I believe so, Mark. Is that not the case?
So I am not. I doubt that, honestly. So when you're saying that personnel sent them to everybody who filed petitions in the last legislative election, I mean, no.
No,
that is not happening.
Right. And
I don't think it's ever happened ever.
I don't think it's ever happened either. I've never. I mean,
I wouldn't know because I've always been a designated filer since these things came out.
Right.
I definitely was not made aware as a candidate for comptroller that this should be filed. And so I had no idea. And I had no contact with the personnel office. It would have to come through the Board of Elections, I think.
So, right. I don't know. I mean, personnel could work with the Board of Elections, but they would have no way of knowing otherwise who filed petitions.
So we need to just make sure again, I think this is a reasonable expectation. You know, people running for office filing a disclosure is not necessarily, you know, a bad thing, but it's not happening currently. So we should make sure that either we're providing for how it's going to happen, or that we're at least determining that it is happening. So we can make a note. And then furthermore, we have the annual disclosure statements filed within 60 days of taking office, and no later than May 1 of each year. That is happening. Okay. So let's move forward.
I don't know where the positions are actually. I see them designated, and I don't know if you're going to get to that section, but it doesn't appropriately cover my staff, I can tell you that.
Yeah, we are going to get to that section, and we may jump ahead to it shortly. So let's keep moving, because we're getting through this portion, but I think that's an important one to cover. And maybe we'll send it to each department to find out if everyone's covered before we finish. So, okay, so we have F. Hold on one moment. I got a lot of chatter here. What? I just lost him. Okay. Okay, sorry. All right, so we have annual disclosure, G, H, I. Again, these are all technical changes, Jay. We're going to have to go through dates-wise once we get there. Hardship provision, K, L. Comptroller is added in L, but that's not where the full designation is. M. Okay, penalties for events, offenses. We added the substantive change in B, provided that multiple violations of the county ethics law arising from the same common nucleus of facts shall be deemed a single violation for the purposes of impositions of a civil penalty. Okay, any questions, comments there?
I'm not sure that this is one that I agree with fully, but.
Do you want us to?
I'd like to flag that. Okay. I still think that if you commit 10 violations and just because they're the same thing, that it's one fine. I mean, that's not the way it works anywhere else in life.
Okay, so we'll flag it and we can discuss it. I think that the intent was to make sure that we weren't violating the same person for the same exact thing, but let's look at it again.
Yep.
Okay, section 9, future employment. These are technical changes, 6 months restriction, 2 year restriction, less requested in writing by the county executive or the chair. Okay, this is essentially the same. These are technical changes, judicial review, training, supersession. Okay. Okay. Control or provisions. All right. So let's. Yep. Amendments to Ulster County Charter and Administrative Code. These are technical changes. Here we go. Okay. And then technical. So then the next thing, Appendix A. I think it's next on this list. Oh, no, Jay, we still need to see Appendix A. Is it not there? Because that's what lists all the people.
I got to go somewhere else.
Oh, you got to stand by. Find somewhere else. Okay.
It is not an exhaustive list, by the way. So any county officer, so if anybody feels like a member of their department is not included, they should be reaching out to Courtney in person now, who is responsible for providing these. Well, but I mean, I think if you're going to do it now, you might as well get anybody. But like, you know, this year we added 58 employees, right? And many of which were new titles.
Yeah. And so I think that what we need to do is make it an exhaustive list for this minute, and then include a provision saying that it's not exhaustive, even though it'll be exhaustive for this minute, but that we, you know, it can be amended or as positions are added, that they will be, you know, if they're subject to this, that they'll be included and added at the point that we can amend. But Yeah, I mean, right now in executive office, we don't have assistant deputy executives. They're not in there. I think that they should be in there. We don't have the innovation department at all, you know, to your point. So maybe we could have each department, or we could have the executive's office look at all the executive departments, make suggestions for additions, and comptroller and the other electeds make suggestions within their departments, and then we'll cross-reference and sit down with personnel before finalizing the law.
Can I just say something about this Appendix A attached to this proposed law?
Yes.
This does not have strike throughs or modifications to what is actually the law. So this whole Appendix A looks, I haven't checked every department, but my department is not what is in the law right now. So you should, you know, pick one list or the other, but be clear about what you're using and maybe go back to the list that is the law right now. So people add the appropriate, I don't know.
Yeah. Can we see what's in the law right now? You're saying that this has been changed and it's not.
Exactly. I can throw, if this is helpful, in the chat, the link.
Jay, it looks like Jay's pulling it up right now.
Yeah.
It was attached to Jay's email too, I think.
So let's go down to comptroller and see what it says. Comptroller, deputy comptroller.
We're missing deputy executives too on the top.
See, it says deputy auditors, but the list that we were just going through on this proposed local law doesn't have deputy auditors, and there aren't any deputy auditors. So that's
and it
good.
Also has director of internal audit and control. So I don't know why this isn't a red line list. I think we've spent so long on this document that we've just been changing, but I think that's a very important. So Jay, if we can just take the current, what you just put up, take the existing Appendix A, and let's do strike throughs and modifications as we get them back from the departments, and maybe we can reach out. Well, Mark is here, so we know we're officially asking the executive's office to update the existing Appendix A as appropriate.
Do you want me to redline the Appendix A that's with the law from the code and then send that out so they can see what was changed?
What I'm going to recommend is that we take the existing Appendix A and provide that to all electeds and ask them to modify as appropriate. And then we'll cross-reference those modifications with personnel prior to finalizing the law. But I think just take the existing, as Comptroller Gallagher was saying, and provide it for, I'm sure every elected has it, but like provide it for every elected so that they can then let us know what we're missing or what is no longer relevant. And then we'll take that list to make a red line, and then those lists to make a red line, and then we'll take that red line to personnel as one last safety check over our, to make sure we're being thorough. Okay. All right. So, and then we're into disclosure after this. We're into the actual disclosure form. So I think we're, how is everybody? I feel like disclosure. I don't know that we made a ton of changes.
But number three.
I'm looking for it. Number three.
This is the one that no one gets right.
Right. I do. Maybe not the first time.
Me too.
I know Chris is still botching it each time.
Okay.
I botched it? Is that what you said?
I don't look at it. I don't know.
I don't think so. But B used to give like lessons on how to answer this question. she used to tell us.
So we just added your county one, income. You added this one bolded text right here. Yep. This includes income derived from the county of Ulster, which is exactly what everyone excludes, their own county salary.
What does it mean, a matrimonial action?
Maintenance connected with a matrimonial action. So the domestic relations law, you know, dictates that you can file what's called a pendente lite application, which would order the payment of maintenance. So that can be deemed as income.
And that's different than alimony?
No, it's not really different. It's just called maintenance and work.
Why do we have matrimonial action, alimony? It's like two different thoughts.
If it's an out-of-state divorce, I don't know. Sometimes states call it different things. In New York, it's called maintenance.
Spousal maintenance.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, I think we should, one thing before we're finished is we should be clear, because here we have you, your spouse, domestic partner, or dependent children. So I guess the other question is, if we are holding, if we're creating a law that's holding people accountable for members of their household that are financially dependent on them or not, but are members of their household, do they have to provide that information here as well?
I think the answer would be yes, right? I mean, it says this includes income derived from the county of Ulster. If you, your spouse, domestic partner, or dependent children are employees of the county during the reportable year.
Right, but I know, but right now it's just you, your spouse, your domestic partner, and your dependent children. But earlier we create ethical conflicts for people who and prohibitions based on people that extend beyond those four, beyond you, your spouse, domestic partner, or dependent children. We create,
right,
state violations mm-hmm. for people who have, you know, family members living in their household, or not family members living in their household, household members. So again, I'm raising the question of whether or not, if we're creating an ethical conflict based on and prohibitions based on members of the household, should you also have to be disclosing those members of the household as it relates to this? I understand who we're currently disclosing, but should that disclosure extend to anyone that might be creating a conflict for you? And I'm not answering the question. I'm just
putting I think that may be a policy question, not a legal one. You certainly could if you wanted to. There's no legal impediment to doing that.
Right.
It's typically directed by a court. So, I mean, there isn't anything you could do to, I don't know.
What's typically directed by a court?
Maintenance. So, I mean.
We're past that.
I'm talking about household members.
Sorry.
I think the form should match the law. And when, okay, whatever, wherever you guys come down on, you know, Legislator Gavaris's suggestions versus a more narrow construct, the form should match that.
That's what
people are not reading the law in with every line they fill out as much as we want them to.
Okay, so that's a question for it's a fairly serious question for us to consider, because it would certainly change this disclosure form. Expand it to be anyone who's a member of your household. But then it would be very clear that anyone who's a member of a household presents a potential conflict for you.
That would expand dramatically, I would think.
For some people, it wouldn't change my household. You know, my household is what my household is right now. But it would certainly, for some people, yes. But what we're proposing right now is that expansion creates a conflict in the law. It's just not required to disclose that person in the disclosure right now if it doesn't fall, if it's not in the narrow definition of a spouse, domestic partner.
Right, it's inconsistent. No, I agree with you. I think we should strive towards consistency, I think.
Yeah. So, and it's something I didn't raise before, I'm sorry. That's what happens when you sit on things for a very, very long time.
And then did you also, in that same vein, am I looking to take out the not have step people?
Where are you?
I'm in the next one. I just made a note to self to look for that reference and conflict throughout the disclosure form.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just relatives in county service.
Right. This disclosure has a lot of conflict with the law. I mean, as you're pointing out, because this now we're talking about grandchildren, relatives in county service, grandchildren. You know what? If it doesn't create a conflict in the law, why do you need to disclose that your grandchildren work? You know what I'm saying? I'm just not. But maybe it's not a problem because it's just disclosure. But I don't know.
Can I ask one thing on section three that it just simplify it, and after the bold, you just strike you. Like, why are we asking? I mean, I get that you want to know if their spouse, domestic partner, all those are working in Ulster County and have the other income. Why are we asking them to rewrite their salary in here? Which is what tricks everybody.
Yeah.
I guess I don't understand the point. I mean, we know any of these individuals know they're getting paid.
Right. So you're saying get rid of you. So right here, we would be highlighting that include income from the county that's going to your spouse, and all these other people.
Correct. Just strike you.
I mean, I'm okay with it. I think it's crazy that we write down we're filling out the form because we're county employees.
Right.
Or officers.
It's a matter of public record also.
So this includes income derived from the county of Ulster for your spouse, domestic partner, and get rid of if you?
Sorry, I guess I would leave if, and it just, I would just strike you.
You, right. That would really lighten the response for the county employees here who don't have
this question, right?
Yeah.
So let's do that and see. Why have we been having to write down our salary here? Is there a reason we do that? Okay. No. So everyone's saying basically they don't know why.
I don't think there's a real reason.
Okay.
I just think we've been asked to do it and we just do it because we're good county employees.
I mean, I guess maybe the only difference is that there are some people who would be filling this out who are not, there are some people who will be filling this out who are not paid officers of the county.
Like members of the Board of Ethics. Or right. The Human Rights Commission.
And right. It also stated that, which I'm not sure is happening, that every member of constituted political parties in the county, you know, all the officers of the constituted political parties.
These have been sent to the chairs and officers of the party.
And have they been filled out?
I don't know. I know that they've sent them.
Right. So, but it's possible that those people may not work for the county, may not derive any money.
That's accurate.
But I guess it's
some may.
I guess it's possible that somebody could have to fill this out because of another, their quote unquote a party or some other thing that besides being one of the listed employees / officers that have to fill it out, right? So then you would want to know if those people make an income from the county.
So why don't we do this? And this is like a novel in our last 5 minutes, novel and crazy idea. Why don't we begin with county, you know, county employment and just list the people who derive money from the county and make it very clear. I mean, I think what's confusing is that county employment is included as other income in excess of 1 year, you know, and it's grouped with lecture fees and whatever. Why don't we lead by saying, basically, are you employed by the county? If so, list your, you know, list your name and your title and your salary. That's it. Simple. And the name, title, and salary of anyone else in your family who or in your household that that's covered by this. And that's question one. And then, boom, real estate ownership outside. Or that's question two, real estate ownership. And then county employee, outside employee, other income. And that way, if someone may write not applicable, they're not employed by the county at all. They don't make any money from the county. It'll be clear as day. This person does not make any money from the county. Next question.
No objection.
Yes. Council Ragucci. Okay, thank you.
Obviously, there's no legal issue there. I would just respectfully note the deputy's comment regarding the duplicitous nature of listing your own income if you're a county employee when you do, you know, it's a matter of public record anyway.
Yeah, but you have to look it up. I think the idea of this is that someone can pull this and we'll see, you know, if the person's a county employee. Like, again, we'll look at someone on the Human Rights Commission, or someone who's running for office, or someone who is an officer for a political party, may not be a county employee and may write not applicable, and someone else in that same role may be a county employee, and that may be of import. I mean, I think the idea of this is to limit people's searching through public records and other sources to find information, is to put everything in one place so that it's clear and transparent in terms of how every person connected with the county is receiving their money. And it would also make a difference, I think, to someone looking at this to know that someone's receiving $10,000 in income as a part-time person, you know, in the historian, for example, versus, I don't know what they get paid, I'm just throwing a number out, versus someone who is deriving the vast majority of their income from their work in the county. So I mean, I think the cleanest way is to just keep it as a totally separate question.
I would agree from a written, you know, a drafting standpoint, 100%.
So can we draft? So let's draft that.
So we're just going to do a new question.
Yeah.
The county income, and then leave other income, sort of separate them, and then just renumber accordingly.
Correct. Yeah. And taking out you, obviously, right? In three.
No, taking the whole thing in three, it would remove this includes income derived from the county of Ulster.
Right.
Exactly. I'm going to call it county income or county salary or something like that and send a draft around. You'll all look at it. And then,
yeah. Okay. And then we could put it in either a number one or number two. Okay. All right. And then I think we're done for today. This is what time we allotted for today. Does anyone have anything else they'd want to discuss today on what we've gone through so far?
Can I just make one comment?
Yeah.
It's, you know, the whole ethics law seems really focused on people needing to do the right thing on their own, because there is no sort of prospective check of people's conflicts. And I've often wondered that, just, you know, even back in my prior life in Ulster County, like who's ever going to check, or who's ever going to know? So it's only if a problem comes to light that it really pops up. So I just want to mention that it's kind of a structure of the whole code. But there's no person or entity or office going through and making sure, right? Mm-hmm. We rely on people to disclose their own conflicts.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Not even a sample.
We also have a potential for complaints and a board with which to adjudicate them. So I would disagree with that respectfully.
So, and if there are models that exist that are better, I mean, we can certainly look at them. So I would put that out there too. But I hear both points. Yes, Councilor Gucci.
Just to the comptroller's point, in the private sector, obviously we have compliance officers, like people that are dedicated to ensuring that all corporate formalities are maintained and that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing ethically as well. would it be the appetite of this body to potentially explore possibly setting up some kind of position that would be focused on ethics and ensuring compliance?
Compliance officer?
We have a compliance officer. That's beyond my purview, naming titles, but just a person that would serve in such a capacity, you know. It could be a compliance
officer. The point is that we have a corporate compliance officer.
I sit on the corporate compliance committee. A whistleblower hotline. It's slightly different. I mean
from an ethics perspective.
Right.
You know. An ethics officer. I think the comptroller makes a good point in that regard. We, you know, just like as lawyers, right, we're self-regulated and, you know, not everybody can do that. You know, sometimes lawyers can't do it, but you know what I mean? It's not always the most efficient way to do it or effective.
Affirm.
People are sometimes not aware that they're having a conflict. It's not really about people, you know, doing it with intent. I just wanted to mention, and I think it's something worth thinking about over the next, you know, period of time as we contemplate the next set of changes. And if I see a good model, I'll certainly bring it forward. I haven't looked or seen one.
Yeah, I mean, I think another thing that your comment brought up in my mind is that we might also think about facilitating a way to, so we're given these things in hard copy. A lot of times people fill them out online and then print them out and they have to be signed and notarized, which I understand. But then, you know, I'm not even sure how do people get access to them right now? Are they all posted online?
Foil them through the ethics board.
They all have to get foiled through the ethics board?
No, okay. they have to get foiled. So the ethics board themselves foils them, and you know they're filed, I believe, with our
with the clerk, yeah.
And then
they go over to the ethics board, I think.
The ethics board foils them.
Okay, all right. So that's also something to think about. I mean, in terms of transparency, how readily available the information is. So I know some of this makes people uncomfortable because there's not a lot of financial detail. It's more who you have relationships with that are enumerated. So, So that's another thing to think about, because that's certainly the more transparent we make these documents, the more likely that someone else could hold us accountable or be a whistleblower or be on top of it if we're not holding ourselves accountable. All right. Well, I thank everybody for their time, and hopefully we're getting close. So we'll get these changes drafted and circulated in short order, and we'll also have the request going out to the elected officials regarding the updates to those that are relevant in the departments. All right. Thank you all. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. I guess that's going to be you, Ken, and me second.
I'll move that.
I'll second it. I don't even think we're a meeting anymore. All right, but thank you, everyone who's been on the line, too.
Take care.
All right. Have a good night.